Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Are we doing this? Really?
Wait for it.
Are we doing this?
Wait for it.
Pow!
What the fuck?
WTF.
And it's also, what the fuck?
What's wrong with me? It's time for WTF.
What the fuck?
With Mark Maron.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fucksters? What the fucking billies? What the fuckstables? How's it going? It's me, Mark Maron. This is WTF. Welcome to the show. I appreciate you hanging out. All right, look, Tim and Eric are here, all right? And Tim and Eric are Tim and Eric. Their show, Bedtime Stories, is airing on Adult Swim right now. There's a new episode tonight. They're also on tour with Dr. Steve Brule, a.k.a. John C. Reilly. So check timanderic.com for tour dates. And I interviewed Heidecker a while back. That would be the Tim of the Tim and Eric. We had a nice chat. He acted like a normal person. I wasn't anticipating that. And then the two of them wanted to come in, and that was the way I could talk to Eric. So this is a little Eric heavy. But I'm happily surprised. It seems like I got access to some relatively grounded people. See, the thing about Tim and Eric, as much as I love them and I appreciate their genius, anytime I see them or run into them, I immediately feel like they're fucking with me somehow. That was not the case here. So, you know, that interview is coming up. Thank you for coming out to the Tripany House. I've had great crowds. All the shows are about sold out. You can check. There might be standing room. Got some work done. It gets to a point where, I got work done, but then I forget it's Tuesday and I get up on stage after who was on last night? Nate Bargatze was on. And he did 15. And then I do like an hour and a half, forgetting it's Tuesday and that perhaps people have things they need to do with their lives. But you know, it's about me until I start realizing, like, holy shit, I'm bored of me. Maybe it's time to wrap this up. Before I forget, I believe there's still plenty of passes available for LA Podfest. You can go to WTFpod.com and get a link to that. Friday and Saturday. Friday night, I'll be appearing on Girl on Guy with Aisha Tyler. And then on Saturday, I'm doing a big live WTF with Pam Adlon, Whitney Cummings, Amber Preston, Desi Jadakin, and Shelby Farrow. And my 15-year-old niece is going to be with me. So do not think she's my girlfriend. Don't act that way. All right, moving on. As some of you know, I talked about on Monday that Monkey, my cat Monkey, was going as dick. And I didn't have time to take him to the vet, but I rationalized it somehow that he'd be okay. But this is what my brain does. Because I had cat Boomer, as you know, Boomer lives, had crystals once. And that was a horrible thing. And I didn't know it until I barely saved his life. It's, you know, they get these crystals from shitty cat food or whatever that build up in their bladder and clog their pee hole. I'm sorry. Are you driving to work? Are you eating something? There's nothing more disconcerting than a clogged pee hole, as many of you know. Even the thought of it, even those of you who don't think of it, not a pleasant thing. But I barely saved Boomer, so I knew this was a possibility with Monkey. But I do want to say this. I really appreciate the outpouring of support and prayers for my cat's dick. I'm blessed. But I was worried that he was going to be dead. So here's what happens. So I'm on the airplane. I'm coming back from Texas. And then I just decide that my cat Monkey's dead. I've left him. I've abandoned him with his urinary tract problem. He probably is clogged, and he's dead when I get home. That's what I'm thinking. That's what I lock into. That's what I spend about an hour and a half on the plane from Austin. So make it 3 hours, just like thinking I'm going to drive in and find my beloved cat Monkey dead because of my negligence. That's what I decided to do with my afternoon. Hey, brain, what's going on? Nothing? Your cat's dead. We don't know that. Doesn't matter. Let's make him dead for now. So Of course, I enter my house, panicked, freaked out. Monkey's like, what's up? I'm like, you're not dead. He's like, no, I'm a little uncomfortable. And I said, it's weird that you're talking. But I had to cajole him into the case, which is difficult. I got one shot at that. I had to set up the cage to put him in the cage, and I get him over to the vet. I get him over to Gateway Animal Hospital. I wait around. I'm sort of freaked out. I see my doc, Dr. Jimerson. Dr. Jimerson is like, how are you? And I'm like, well, the cat's, I don't know what's going on with it. I think he's got a bladder problem. So Jimerson's like, yeah, well, he's probably got a bladder infection. I'm going to give him a 10-day antibiotic. I'm like, great. But let's get some ointment for the eye. And I'm like, I don't know if we should get, there's no way I'm getting it in the eye. And he's like, I think you can do it. It's pretty easy. And I'm like, fine. So I go out in the waiting room for a while. And then he's like, well, I want you to come back and I'll show you how to do the ointment. Don't ever go into the back of your vet. If you get offered, you know, like, come on back, don't go. I didn't need to see it. I assume a real operating room's like that too. It's disconcerting to see things open with things being held down and blood here and there. I'm not giving any bad press to my vet. I'm sure it was as clean as a vet is. She's like, let me show you how to put this ointment on. It's easy. Now, I want to preface this story by he's about to show me how to put ointment into my cat's eye, and there are two grown-ass men holding my cat down. Two men holding it down. And Jimerson pulls the head back, puts the ointment in both eyes. He goes, that's all you got to do. And I'm like, oh, is that all I got to do? Are these two guys coming home with me? Because I don't have a place for them to sleep. So, needless to say, I have the ointment, has not made it into Monkey's eye yet. But he seems to feel better. It seems like the dick issue is better, and that's a good thing because I want to keep Monkey around. What's up, Ryan Singer's just sitting here. You're just sitting here. I'm looking at you.
Here sweating.
No, but I'm looking for some laughs for something. Nothing.
Oh, I didn't know I was supposed to be laughing out loud.
You weren't even pretending to hold in laughter.
I was trying not to distract you.
Detract me?
Distract.
Distract. Distract is the word you're looking for? So where you been? You been on the road?
Yeah, I was on the road for about 2.5 months.
2.5 months in your car?
Yeah, straight.
That must smell bad in the car after a certain point.
Oh, yeah, that 99 Camry's got some smell on it.
Yeah, smell. It's got, how many miles on it?
284 almost.
You're a warrior.
Yeah.
You're out there doing the real work.
Yep.
What happened out there?
Oh, well, everything happened. Everything I didn't want to happen, everything I did want to happen. You know, a lot of new material came about, some interesting life situations that...
Sounds vague.
Well, a crazy dude showed up at my hotel one night.
Because what?
I was hanging out with a young woman, and then some crazy dude shows up at the hotel, gets arrested, starts kicking the glass. He got stuck in the glass revolving door at the hotel, you know, they had those downstairs?
Yeah.
Because he was so mad that he went into the revolving door when they said that the police were coming to arrest him.
Yeah.
Because apparently he was just wandering around the parking lot screaming obscenities by himself before he came inside.
Not a good sign.
Not a good sign. So, especially not a good sign when that guy has you in his sights. So, he gets into the revolving door and he starts kicking the glass, and then so the door stops. It's one of those automatic ones that you can't touch or it'll stop. So he's just like, you know, like imagine a hamster and its little spinning wheel getting stuck in his spinning wheel because he's kicking and punching the spinning. I mean, it was scary, but I mean, in hindsight, it was pretty funny. And
pretty
was
just, hilarious.
It was pretty hilarious.
It was a great example of impotent rage.
Yeah, a lot more funny once he was in handcuffs as well.
But what were you doing? Was he out of his mind?
He was out of his mind, apparently.
Who was why was he after you?
He was the ex-boyfriend of a
ex-boyfriend
woman.
Who happened to be around.
Who happened to be, well...
Ex-boyfriend who may not have seen it that way.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently so. I don't know. The irony is that I was hanging out with his ex-girlfriend as she was just talking... True story, nothing funny was happening. She was just talking about him.
Uh-huh.
And we happened to be at my hotel when that was happening. And then he shows up.
Doesn't sound like it was over for at least one party involved.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, that's like, those are the things you try to avoid on the road because you just don't want to be put in situations like that.
Sure, yeah.
Every once in a while, you're, you know, Monkey's not the only one with a dick problem every once in a while.
Yeah, well, I understand, Ryan. All right, so, well, thanks for stopping by. I'm going to talk like you're not here now.
Okay. I'll try not to laugh.
No, I don't... What else did I talk about last night that I should talk about right now?
The 3 to 6 months. That's some solid. You've already talked about.
Not really. Well, that's a new thing from the new thing from the book I'm reading is is that here's the deal. There's a chance that if you were an infant and your mother, you came out and your mother just didn't like you, you're probably better off than if she liked you at all for any amount of time. Because here's the thing. If you're an infant and your mother has you and she's like, oh my God, I love this baby so much. And she just loves and loves and loves you for like 3 or 4 months. And then all of a sudden she sours on you. Like, oh, what a pain in the ass this is. And literally becomes resentful of you, which is completely possible. And I think what happened in my case, perhaps. But that's the thing. If your mother shuts down emotionally after she gave you some of that love, like at 3 or 4 months for whatever her problem is or whatever it is, but if she shuts down and can't give you the organic love because of her own problems, but you already had it for 3.5 months, you know what that means? You will spend the rest of your life trying to get it. But you can't just ask for that. You can't be a 50-year-old man and go, Mommy, can we go back to when I was 4 months and start there again? No, that's not how that manifests itself. It's like, how much cereal can I eat? Is a box too much? Blow's good. I like blow. I masturbated for 3 hours today. That's what I did. I think I'll drink a pint of vodka. Yummy. That's how I feel warm. Why not get a prostitute? That would make me feel warm. In all of those situations, in that decision-making process, right when you have any of those sordid thoughts, try this. Mommy? Mama? 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 Nothing! All right, let's talk to, I'm going to talk to Tim and Eric.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Now.
Here we go. Cell phones on.
That's great. Leave your cell phones on. I don't know what the fuck to do with you guys.
You're not prepared.
No, I'm not prepared, but because I talked to you, Tim, and I've never met the big one.
Well, now it's time, baby.
Okay,
let's talk big boy stuff.
I was one time. I was standing outside the Tropical Cafe in Silver Lake.
I remember.
You do not remember.
You were attending a meeting.
I was attending a meeting.
You think I forget. I remember everything.
But I didn't talk to you. You just were there, and I waited around. I'm like, I wonder if that guy knows me. And you said nothing.
Since you already covered me, why don't you make this the Eric Wareheim interview, and I'll be here for color commentary and annotations and corrections.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can do that. Do you remember?
I do remember you there, and I said, you know, he looks like a dirty man. It's just.
Right.
He's there for help. I'm here for coffee.
Right.
We were there for two different reasons.
Right. So, but you did notice me.
Yeah. And I said, eventually this guy's going to get big enough that I'll be able to say,
This is exactly the feeling I got from you.
Yeah.
So I was right on the money.
We also had other moments. We were in line to get tickets and stuff.
That was a nicer moment, I recall.
Yeah. Your podcast was getting bigger.
So you were more comfortable with me. You're like, this is not, he's not a desperate man outside of.
No, but every time you'd see us, you'd hammer us about doing the show. So we were, if we saw you, we were sort of like, oh boy.
Oh, really? But then you came on because you had.
And I denied that?
No, you came on.
I came on, yes.
You had big dreams of being a solo act. And you were out. You're out there.
He cheated on me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was happy to facilitate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted that attention. I didn't want to, but I had to promote that damn movie I was in. I had to do the right thing by them.
So that wasn't a big dream of yours to like, now I'm
I was my dream
I've
come
arrived,
true to do.
I'm
going to
be
WTF.
Without Eric.
Yes.
And I'm gonna be a star, a leading man of indie films.
Eric got me to a certain level, and now it's time to fly.
We had this thing that you asked us so many times to be on this that we're like, we are never gonna do this.
No, I felt that. I felt tension. It felt weird.
No,
and
but
was
it
like,
wasn't. It wasn't.
I was uncomfortable.
We didn't. It's not because we didn't like you. People would tweet at us all the time. When are you gonna do the show? And we would write back like, "Who's this guy? Like who?" As a joke, as a goof.
Well, this guy didn't take it as a joke.
It was always
this
about,
one here.
Yeah, but it was always like that thing we don't want to reveal. The cards of our of our technique and stuff, but we don't really care so much anymore.
Really? You're beyond that? It's not, you're like just professionals now. You can turn it on when you need to. You can start spitting food and wearing weird clothes when you need
to. Older. I mean, look at her outfits. Two men in shorts, some sneakers.
I did watch the one thing they had up for the new things. Tim and Eric's Bedtime Stories. I watched one of them.
Which one?
The one where you're an asshole and you're a doofus.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also remember another reason is you used to talk shit on us.
Here we go.
Our friends.
Did I?
Yeah. You were, you not talk shit. You would just say, listen, I don't understand these guys. Can you tell me why they're funny?
Yeah.
Because I think, I don't know why.
I maybe. Think, no, no, I wait, remember so that
is,
differently.
This is a deeper thing.
But I remember that a little differently.
There's a problem with him and I. You go ahead.
You
be
were
diplomatic.
A fan. You seem to be a fan, but there seems to be things about it that you don't connect with, and it was challenging to you. That was interesting to me.
Was the guy, I think, that said, you guys are the comedy equivalent of Ween, which was a compliment.
That's okay. A big compliment.
Now, I did get it.
Or Frank Zappa, you also said, which isn't so much of a compliment.
Very big compliment.
Not to me, but...
Well, why? Because he was...
I never connected with him.
We're not Zappa heads, but people think that we are.
Well, no, you don't have to be Zappa heads, but he built his own universe on his own terms.
Right.
And he had a very specific, his own sense of humor, and a lot of it was meant to provoke.
Right.
And I think that maybe there was a time when, probably around the same time you guys were not doing the show because of your attitude, that I may have been saying, like, no, get it. No, I'm not on board.
Yeah.
But I did like, there was a couple of things where I really got it and I really liked it. And I think I spoke to him about all the different sort of video qualities you were drawing from and all the weird kind of amateur / public TV feel. And I was really taken with the one where you were dancing around dressed as a hamburger and you were just kept shoving food in your mouth.
Yeah.
To me, I thought that was America and I understood it. I understood everything that was great about you guys. And then I watched other ones. I do get it. I'm a fan. Well, do you understand?
Yeah.
I'm a fan. Whatever I said to your friends was out of bitterness and the fact that you were slighting me, and I thought that you thought you were better than I was.
Jealousy, and for me, just not acknowledging you at that cafe.
That's right.
It all went back
that's
to
right.
that cafe.
That's how this town works, Eric. And now look where you are.
We're coming to you.
It's right. You drove
to your
over.
Throne.
What, Tim?
Put
people
Tim in a tiny
hostile,
woman's chair.
People have a lot of hostile feelings towards us, I think, because they feel like we're gaming the system somehow. With
do you feel
style.
That's true?
I guess so.
No,
my
I think
dad said that to me the other day. He said, you're just gaming the system.
No. What's anybody doing out
I
here?
I don't know. We're all trying to do something, right?
But like this thing seems to be, the thing I watched was very well produced. It seemed to have a theme. It seemed that you were satirizing something specific.
Yeah.
And that there was a, well, not unlike the movie. It was, it felt like it was together. It didn't feel like there was as much crazy wild, that might have only happened once feeling.
Yeah.
Right.
How much of
yeah,
that?
Yeah, there's a story. Yeah, there's a story this time.
Right. Well, yeah. Why are you doing it like this?
Well, we made 50 episodes of our sketch show,
right?
Where there were 20-second bits, and
right.
Then we made a couple short films for Funny or Die. They had the HBO series.
Yep.
And there's a nice budget, so it looked cinematic, and that's kind of where we wanted to be.
How many of these did you do of the bedtime stories?
We have 8. In total, 7 new ones. We released a pilot last October, the one with Galifianakis, the haunted house one.
I didn't see that one.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
But that's more about Tim, Eric, and Zach being super silly. Some of the ones that you saw are a little bit darker, or a little bit more cinematic.
Well, that was the one where you were buried.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, did I fuck it up? Spoiler.
Buried, like metaphorically.
Metaphorically.
Speaking.
Buried. No.
Buried in work.
Yeah, buried in work.
I'm a busy accountant.
But I guess the thing that gets me about you guys, and I always want to know, is, and I think I tried to get it out of you, but I don't know, it's sort of like asking a musician the same questions or an actor how they act, is that, you know, you've evolved these styles that draw from so many, you know, kind of things that we all sort of dismiss as just being peculiar or amateur, and you've made this this entire point of view out of it. I mean, how intellectually are you aware of what you're doing, or do you just sort of go like, let's just fucking try this?
I mean, you know, for this, you talking generally? Or
yeah, I'm talking generally.
Generally, I think it's based on shit that Tim and I really synced up with in college that we thought was ridiculous.
Like, what was the first thing that you can remember that brought you guys together that made you do that?
The first exact thing was we were in a film 101 class. Tim and I went to film school. We wanted to be directors, and we had to take these bullshit theory classes with 500 people. We sat next to each other. We started writing band names to each other.
Right.
And Tim wrote a band named TGIF. Yeah. And for some reason, that cracked me up so hard. And we were laughing so hard that we get yelled at by the professor. And they said, can we see you after class? And we're like, oh my God, we're in college. You're being yelled at. So I don't know. Just even that moment was something that like synced us up, that we're like, just the feeling of being embarrassed. Like, that's funny to us.
Well, can you, let's track that though. Like, if we can, and I'm just going to be a little professional, because TGIF, that it's simple, it's stupid, it's sort of like
lame.
It's lame on purpose.
There's a restaurant.
Right. Yeah. But I mean it was essentially that lameness that was hilarious.
Yes.
The lameness,
stupidity.
Intentional lameness.
Yeah, stupidity that you have to be on the same page with the idea that I'm not really suggesting that as a name.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
And he got that immediately.
Right.
And then history is made.
There you go. Yeah.
And then
irony.
Irony.
I mean, it's all, that's the stupid
that is kind
word,
of irony.
But it is all, you have to all be on the same page that the world, we're all fucked and everything is, most things are garbage. Most products that we're,
right.
whether it's movies or TV shows or books,
right.
it's mostly garbage and mostly patronizing to us and, you know.
Yeah. And what's interesting is when we met, we were actually coming from two different kinds of dudes. You know, when you go to college, it's like sort of,
you're still trying to find yourself.
But we like... We're very different guys, but we kind of rose above that comedically.
Like, how are you? Like, what do you mean?
Like, I was like a punk rock dude, big baggy pants. Like, I just was straight edge for a while. Tim was a little more in the hippie scene. Had a goatee, I think, longer hair.
Really?
Yeah.
Hacky sack? How deep were you?
Not very athletic, so I couldn't get into that scene.
Just a bong?
Like, you wanted it hacky.
Just like a lot of pot.
A lot probably. Of pot?
I never liked it very much. But
did you listen to Fish? Or?
No, I tried it, and I was not into Fish.
What was your thing, though? Like, what were you, like, jamming to?
Spin Doctors, mostly.
Really? Spin Doctors?
No,
that was not ironic.
No,
that
I mean,
was
ironic. Well, sure. I mean, that
you
was,
did listen
I
to
probably
a
had
doctor.
That CD in high
uh-huh.
school, yeah.
And, like, what?
I didn't embrace anything, any sort of subculture too strongly.
So you're a loner.
A little loner. Comedy. Theater, film. I was kind of a theater guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you sing?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah?
Mm. Yeah.
You did some
Big
musicals?
Time. Oh, yeah.
What did you
I
do
I did
in
musicals
high school?
In high school.
I didn't do shit.
Really?
No, I was the president of the AV club.
Really?
So, yeah, that's where I got a lot of that early video toaster.
The Onion AV club?
No. This is
a real
the
AV
fact
club.
In high school AV club. Like, I literally learned on the video toasters, two bad VHS decks, like,
right.
a lot of that shit. I made some great stuff in high school.
So that was your training is...
Yeah.
So what you were sort of making fun of or using as tone was really what you came from.
Exactly. And then that, transferred into college. Tim and I, our film school had one computer, which we didn't have access to.
Yeah.
And the other other shit was this old, archaic video equipment that every time you try to make an edit... it would jump. And, you know, there's one point that Tim and I started making something, and I was like, this is really shitty. I need to tighten this up. And Tim's like, no, just keep it like that.
Because he didn't want to fuck it up with the equipment?
Like, literally, I was my other job during college and right after, I was a bat mitzvah videographer. I would videotape.
Just bat mitzvahs?
Bar mitzvahs as well. Because
that would have been weird. Not do bar mitzvahs, just bat mitzvahs.
I would videotape any rich... I worked at a photo store in this rich community where these people would
come
in.
Where was this?
This is Ardmore, Pennsylvania.
Really?
Yeah, and people would come in and be like, my kid's doing a ballet recital. Would you come film it? And I'm like, sure. So I'd film it, and then I would tape over these... We didn't have any money, so I'd tape over these tapes with Tim and I fucking around, and sometimes these little kids would pop in and we would just keep that. And there's one thing we'd made called the Cat Film Festival where you see that clip of that poor little girl still in there
dancing,
archived for forever. Yeah,
so you took the original after you dubbed it and you just used the tapes.
Yeah, we did not have enough money to buy another Super 8 tape at that point.
Super 8 video the little
video.
Teeny
videos. Yeah, we would also go to Sears and buy video cameras, and at that point they would have a 60-day return policy.
Right.
So we would buy it, shoot all weekend or for 2 months, and on that 59th day, we would return that camera. And I remember the Sears AV guy looking at the counter, like, yeah. You've shot hundreds of hours of footage on this. And I said, look at your receipt. And we returned
it. That was a deal here.
It was beautiful. That's how we started making all of our early stuff.
That was when you were in college, first year?
This was after college, believe it or
not. When we tried to have like real jobs.
But you know? Okay, so you come out of high school. You were in high school doing the shooting?
High school doing like the very early video kind of stuff.
What was your stuff? What were you impressed with in terms of, like, obviously when you shoot that stuff, it's hard to avoid it being something cheesy. You know, so you're shooting on high 8 or super 8 video, and you're shooting some kids' bar mitzvah, and the mother, they want coverage.
They just want
to get the kid.
They want to document.
Get the tables.
Yeah.
Did you get this table?
You got the tables. I remember this one moment and my girlfriend was my assistant, and this was a real low point. We're shooting
it was a great dynamic in the relationship.
Yeah. She hated me for making her do this.
Go to bar mitzvahs with you?
Yeah.
Did you do the synagogue stuff too?
Yeah, I did everything.
So you can
imagine me
in the synagogue?
Oh yeah.
Well,
Zooms. At the one party, I was getting my table coverage.
Yeah.
And they started throwing like Hershey Kisses at my girlfriend's head and me.
The kids.
These kids.
Yeah.
These bad boy kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember turning around looking at these kids like, I'm going to fucking kill you. But I can't, you know,
right.
I can't.
Right.
So that was a pretty dark moment in my life.
I remember you had a special dress shirt for these occasions, too. You had like one shirt a dress-up shirt, you know?
It was like a tuxedo top with this big gold button, you know, that I got at JCPenney for like $12, real silky, blousy.
See, like JCPenney to me plays into your whole, can I use the word oeuvre?
Yes.
Can we use that? What do you think?
Oeuvre? Is it oeuvre? Yeah.
I think it's oeuvre, isn't it?
We've used that term
feminine body part
many times for our costume designers. Like, just go to JCPenney.
Really?
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Also, like, we would give them pictures of my dad. You know, my dad has the best wardrobe. Like, big baggy shorts, Birkenstocks, big black socks, big bloomy silk shirt with flames, big Indian Jones hat. Like,
really?
My dad is awesome. Yeah, it's perfect.
Probably some pictures of him in like leisure suits at some time.
Yeah.
We've actually run into this interesting problem on this new show because a lot of the time we want people just dressed like normal people, you know? So we'll say, can you just get a normal look for this person? And the hipsters now have appropriated every angle of how people dress. So if you say, I just want like a polo shirt and pants. Half the time,
it's
like, you look
cool.
Like, well, did you get that American Apparel?
Right.
You look like just go like
terry cloth.
Yeah, or like go blue collar, like white trash type. Well, they've gotten that too. If you put in a tank top and cut off jeans, and that looks still like your Echo Park.
Right.
So they've ruined it.
They've ruined everything.
They've taken every form of irony and like bad culture and have just appropriated it.
So there's no
nowhere to go.
There's no
except
way to
actually going to JCPenney's and getting the Hagar slacks,
the new stuff.
The new stuff. Yeah.
Right.
Bugle Boy jeans.
Even Wranglers I think are not.
Wranglers are not great.
Did you you know what was amazing? Did you see the movie Her? Did you go see that Spike Jonze movie?
Of course.
He did something amazing with the fashion in that. Because he actually took the worst of what we would... The last thing to sort of... To make
popular.
Cool.
Right, right.
He kind of went with that all the way through.
Yeah.
Like weird waist-high pants and leisure... And terry cloth shirts.
Yeah.
That was genius. I don't know who was in charge of that, the wardrobe design on that. Uh-huh. But that really resonated with me. It's like, it's hilarious. They took the worst of it and they amped it up a little bit.
Yeah.
So your dad was the inspiration. But you grew up in, I imagine, Pennsylvania, you too?
Yeah, Eastern Pennsylvania.
Like, I don't even have a point of reference on that, but it's pretty towny, I imagine. It's not New Jersey.
No.
I grew up in Albuquerque, but, you know, but that type, there's that weird kind of like practical American attire, and then there's like towny cool from the 70s.
Yeah. I mean, this was more practical American. Like, my dad had a couple cool vintage things, but not really. Like, my mom would make sure he was updated with Sears, JCPenney.
Sears catalog.
They just didn't see any reason not to.
Yeah, and when my dad comes to see us now, Tim and I do these live shows, and his outfits are unbelievable. He wears these, what are those leather jackets? Wilson's.
Oh, yeah.
He gets a really baggy Wilson's leather jacket. It's too long, and he's wearing these big Indiana Jones leather hats. And I always like introduce them like, my mom and dad are here, and they stand up and they love it. And they're my mom has real full cat sweaters with cat brooches, and he's got his leathers like his.
And they're not playing it up.
Big print.
Oh, no.
Big
printed with sandals. Always sandals, even in the winter.
But it's this like, is his thing.
It's
they're,
thing.
They're not
he
saying like we've got to honor our son's point of view.
No, no, no. They do not get it.
They don't get it.
They see. He sees his own fashion in his show. It's like, oh, I'm kind of cool. Like,
yeah. Come on, you know. Do they get any of it?
They do get some of it. They do get some of it.
Like
sure.
What?
You know, they get a lot of the physical gags
right,
and stuff.
Right.
They don't. I think Tim's parents are the same way. They don't love the gross out stuff, yeah. The sexual stuff.
They, I mean, they grew up in the 70s, or they were, you know, young adults in the 70s. So they, my parents loved things like Andy Kaufman and, you know, all the weird stuff that would be on late at night, early Saturday Night Live, and that, like, they loved that stuff. So this is connected. Monty, you know, I said Monty Python, but. You know, Make Me Laugh. Remember that show, Make Me Laugh?
Yeah, sure.
The original,
right? With what is it, Bobby Vance? I think hosted it or somebody like that.
Yeah,
Bruce Baby Man Bomb.
The
Bruce
Unknown
Baum.
Comic with
the Unknown Comic. Yeah, so all those guys.
They loved that stuff.
Well, yeah, I think the reason I was probably bitchy about it is because, like, you know, there's very few people that I know, you know, who, and Zach sort of plays into it, but there's just this other, there's another time zone you guys live in, and the way you guys draw from stuff and you make a world out of it is pretty genius, and, you know, that bothers me. But I'm willing, because I never know how on purpose that is, yeah. But it's just sort of innate to you.
Can I say what I think your problem with it is? Ugh. Is that, that your heart is, that our, you don't see our heart in our work.
Or no,
it's, our, it's not coming from us necessarily. There's like a detachment.
No,
from
but
it.
There is a detachment, but I think that's part of it. And some people, and I'm that was my biggest fear about having you guys on. And I wasn't always, like, I wanted you guys on, but I was never clear what the hell I was going to do with you, because I didn't know how I wouldn't become the brunt of the joke somehow. That, like, you guys could come in here and run any kind of number on me you wanted to. And today I was sort of like, I hope they do.
Right, because, I know, because
I already talked to you.
Yeah.
So maybe they'll do something like that. I had ideas. I was going to pitch you ideas. I had ideas I was going to pitch you.
So glad
the thing
we
is, we
that
smell room. That. We were talking about this because we're doing a lot of press for this show, and we can go into a room and smell like an animal would smell a prey.
Right.
If some guy comes in and he does not know who we are and is just asking these stock questions,
right.
we're gonna have fun because it's gonna be boring.
What
otherwise
do you do?
For us? So we just play around with them. We play around like a lion would play around.
I mean, I don't blame you for feeling that way. The last press tour we did for the movie, one of our like mega fans, the sweet girl, compiled like 2.5 hours of video footage of us doing what you're talking about, which is us fucking with the interviewers.
Do you usually just clam up and create a stilted timing, or do you?
It's usually it's very loose. Like it's like Tim will start something, or I'll start something, or someone will be having an acid trip, or it's really fully improvised depending on the vibe. It's hard to recreate it right now.
Sure. We don't talk about it ahead of time too often.
So I love that attitude.
If he starts acting like he's high, you'll just play on.
I'll just be like, I'll help him, or I'll be like, it hasn't kicked in for me yet, but I can't wait to join you, buddy. You know.
And
like,
what do the radio guys do? They love it, or they don't know if you're fucking with them or not?
Yeah. Some people, after we fucked with people so hard that afterward they're like, that was an honor that you fucked with us that bad. You know, like, and we had something recently.
Yeah.
We did one of these young Hollywood shows to promote the pilot of this last year. Oh, they're coming for us.
Door open.
It's okay. You can leave it open, but I'm wondering what that is.
Probably a plane.
Okay. So you did one of these young...
Anyways, we did and instantly we knew this. Paris Hilton was the guest right before us, and Tim and I were just in the worst moods. We could not believe we were here.
Who was the guest before you?
Paris Hilton.
Oh, okay.
So we decided to use this opportunity to just do Baba Booey's, just to get, like, just do a thing for Howard as a present to him. So every answer was like, our new show's called Fla Fla Flunky, and it's about a beaver named Baba Booey. And they didn't know these references.
She didn't get
so
it.
Like, oh, that's cute. Like, what are you gonna do? Are you gonna do a Christmas special? Yes, this is gonna be called Fla Fla Flunky. And then we took that footage and sent it to Jimmy Kimmel, who loved it, and sent it to Howard, and Howard fucking played it and talked about it. So like
talked about it for a while.
It was like the greatest honor.
Were you a big Howard fan?
Huge. Like
when you were a kid?
Massive. Yeah.
Both of you?
Yeah.
14.
YSP 15. In Philly.
Well, yeah, because you got it. You grew up with it.
Yeah.
It was there for you.
Yeah. It was the first thing for me that my parents didn't approve of, like, hardcore. They were just like, that's over the line. Not cool. Like, we kind of synced up on a lot of different things, music and movies and stuff. But that was a nice, like, I can actually be punk. And and like something that my parents don't like.
You were in high school when you were taking that in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he was sort of one of the first people, you know, outside of You know, John Waters did it differently, but Howard would take people who were obviously troubled in one way. You know, I guess fringe is a nice word to put it, but actually people who were not, he was not victimizing them because they embraced it, but they were, fringe, is that the word you would use?
It's a nice word.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
you mean talking about his whack pack?
Yeah. Like Homeless Hollywood Squares when he did the TV show and that kind of stuff, where he would take these people that obviously embraced the idea, but there was this weird line of sort of like, does that person really know?
Sure.
Yeah.
And that line is very tricky, and as I'm sure he would listen to his work and cringe all the time, I'm sure now.
I don't know. Who, Howard, but, you think?
Yeah, I mean, he's already, I think, when you listen to him now, you feel like that's a different guy.
Well, yeah, they get a heart later, you know, especially when they have heart problems. I don't know if he has, but as guys like Letterman and people get older, I don't know if they're living in contrition for what they've done, but they do seem a little more sensitive to it.
Yeah,
softer.
But do you think that's some of where your compulsion to use those people came from?
From like Howard's stuff? I think it was more from moving to Hollywood and not wanting to use any Hollywood actors or comedians.
Right.
And it was more about, Tim and I went back in Philly, we were obsessed with these cable access shows and tapes and seeing people that were not supposed to be on camera. And that was a true awkwardness to see them sing and dance and do whatever.
But they were confident.
Yeah, there's
right. That
super some were. Yeah. Some
which
were.
That was always the interesting thing to me about it, because when I was out here years ago, there used to be this guy. I don't even know his name, but I would, anytime I turn on local, like LA Public Access when they had it before cable, there was this guy, this blonde haired dude that talked spiritual stuff, and he was sort of effeminate, and he would look directly at the camera, or Dr. Gene Scott. Uh-huh. I couldn't stop watching.
Uh huh.
And there's a. The thing is that they're actually doing something pure and raw and real in their weird attempts. And a lot of them are relatively talentless, but it doesn't matter because they're earnest.
Yeah.
And that was, I just read into it, but that was appealing to you.
Absolutely. And a lot of the people we used on our show, they are, in their world, stand-up comedians. They're singers. They're puppeteers. They're, you know,
in their world,
improvised dance. Yeah. I mean, they are these things. They're just not famous for that. They're not talented in a... in a regular way.
Well, and they're not mainstream, and they don't have access. Usually, I mean, Hollywood is really about access.
Right.
And if people are fragile or peculiar or not talented in the way that's necessary to fit into the machine,
sure,
they kind of just sputter along beside it. And this town is full of that.
Yeah, and we've created this outlet for them, and our fans love these people, and you know, they've created their own little fan bases aside from us, and you know, their own community.
There haven't been any tragic stories of people
exploitation.
Not exploitation, but sometimes when people who have been on the margins for so long get attention, it becomes sort of its own tragic story.
Yeah, there's someone made a pilot. They took all the characters from our awesome show.
This is incredible.
Our sketch show. Yeah. All these eccentric guys.
Right.
And he cast this young kid, them all to make a pilot of them together.
Right.
And I haven't seen it, but I imagine it's the biggest disaster ever.
Well, yeah, it's like, I've never cooked before, but I have these ingredients that I don't know exactly what to do with.
It might be great.
It should work. I'll just put everything in this pot.
Well, how do you decide when you guys are working on this stuff? I mean, because there is a sort of the edge of chaos is reached, and sometimes I think that's part of you guys, the gift and the genius of it is that you know what to keep and what not to keep. I mean, you're not shooting live.
Yeah.
So I imagine there's a lot of moments where you're like, that can't go in.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a difference between shooting like, David Liebehart singing a song and like John C. Reilly doing Dr. Steve Brule.
Right,
you know
right.
what I mean?
Sure.
Dr. Steve Brule, 5 minutes, you're going to get gold. David Liebehart, 2 hours, you'll get 30 seconds. You know, so there's a lot of that. It's a lot of like...
different ratios.
Yeah, unconventional ways of getting energy out of people. It's actually really fun. Like,
what does that mean, unconventional ways?
Getting people into the mood. Sometimes, you know, there was a time in the Awesome Show where Tim and I, our director's booth would be in this black duvetine box so no one could see us except for us on microphones. Be like, welcome to the set. And these people would just be looking around like, how are you? you know.
So you'd fuck with them?
Yeah. Just that was later in the season, yeah.
No, no, not in a bad way, but yeah. I mean, they have to be relatively open to the art of what you're doing.
Yes.
Definitely.
They probably feel like, you know, these guys are really artists.
Yeah, I'm a part of it. And
Yeah.
And that's fine.
But when you guys were, like, films, like, you wanted to be directors, so when you were shooting bar mitzvah videos and before you guys met, what was driving you? I mean, what movies were driving you? What made you believe that you could do what you wanted to do or what you became?
I mean, definitely early on, I saw a bunch of Stanley Kubrick movies.
Really?
You know, I had one friend, Don Malcolmus. His mom showed us, I'm blanking the fucking name.
The Killing?
Really crazy Clockwork Orange.
Clockwork Orange. Oh my God.
I was gonna say, what's love got to do with it?
She showed us a Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
When we were like 13 or 14. Ooh. She also showed us Caligula.
Ooh. Oh my God, with the blowjob?
Yes.
I mean,
and the fisting. I mean, that was
what?
That you know that one?
Yeah. She's one of those like teachers that screws the kids in school or something.
She truly was like, and she showed us 2001 at a very early age. I didn't even understand that one.
No one understands that one.
But I think that shit perverted me at a very early age. And also, you would watch Twin Peaks, and my English class, we would talk about Twin Peaks for 20 minutes before we would start class in high school.
Really?
A lot of that, like, David Lynch stuff.
And what about John Waters? Nothing?
Yeah. I was never, like, I think it was a little too cute for me, but I did, like, Hairspray and, I can't
remember. Crybaby.
But not the early stuff? Yeah, the rough stuff.
I think we're a little too young for the early stuff.
But you never sought it out?
No, I mean, no.
I think... What was that guy? The guy who was in The Killing, which is an early black and white Kubrick movie, that Timothy Carey guy. Do you guys know of him?
No.
He's sort of an odd dude. There's been like, I think that when you guys came in and you wrangled what you did here in Hollywood, there's been this weird undercurrent of leading to you guys. You know, like Kenneth Anger and tabloid stuff and weirdo shit. Crispin Glover. Yeah, I mean, there's been stuff that, like, somehow or another, you guys saw it in a way that was kind and funny as opposed to sort of like, well, this is creepy shit. But there's always been that undercurrent here in Hollywood. There's so many people that have just crushed daily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By this thing.
Ed Wood world.
Kind of like B-movie stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that sort of in the same realm, or am I being crazy?
No, I feel like that's in the same realm. I feel like it's definitely Tim and I growing up on the East Coast and trying to keep that vibe when we moved here.
Well, it's that sense of authenticity that you want in the work.
But public access was really it, right? I mean, that informed you guys a lot.
Yes, I mean, public access we didn't really have a lot of public access necessarily, cable access, that kind of thing. I mean, we just had local, small market television.
Right.
Which I think is similar. But sometimes cable access literally is the between two ferns thing. It's like nothing. It's a talk show with a microphone. So there is there's like a little production value.
And we were also
local
part of a
commercials and stuff.
Network of friends that would send videotapes to each other. So we would just sit and watch like crazy things.
The morbid stuff?
Morbid stuff, like James Brown.
Not the Faces of Death necessarily.
No, but like what's his name? The guy shooting himself? That was a Pennsylvania guy, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Was it Bud Dwyer?
No, we wouldn't watch that kind of funny stuff. Like you said,
that was hilarious.
James Brown.
I'm sorry.
James Brown was all fucked up on that news show and.
How about Orson Welles on doing the takes?
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, even, you know, TV Carnage?
No.
TV Carnage is a guy from Canada Derek Beckles, that made this compilation of all Canadian public assets and as well as, like, this that commercial, the champagne thing. We would just watch that over and over and just loved every
Chuck
second.
Chuck Berry pissing on the girl.
Yeah, you know? It was, but you can never smell my farts.
Yeah. That's, like, unbelievable.
It's all pre-internet YouTube.
But
kind
did
of
you ever see
stuff.
Chuck? I don't know if you ever saw
Live?
Chuck. I mean, in the video, you don't really see Chuck Berry. It was sort of...
You see this profile, I think.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You see,
you know, it's no question about who it is.
That's him.
That's funky, man. That's rock and roll
right
there. Oh, did you? Good for you. So that really that's how
it turns us on. Still does.
But let me ask you another question about I feel like that guy because it's I'm coming at it from I'm asking. The thing that I like about all of it is just food. There's just always there at some point during most things, and maybe I haven't seen enough.
Yeah,
but there's somebody with way too much food, and it's going in
the whole in the whole episode that happens, right? With the snacks. Yeah,
But yeah. No, but early on, like, that was the one thing that, like, for some reason haunted me. There's something haunting about some of that shit.
Yeah.
That weird black and white video of you dancing around that fucking hamburger outfit. And then there's some point where you're just fucking eating shit.
Yeah.
And it's falling out of your mouth.
Yeah. Did you ever see the commercial Food Tube?
Uh-uh.
It's a commercial where instead of the painful act of actually cutting food, you get this tube that shoots it into your mouth. You
for just, real?
Yeah. No, oh, no, no, no.
Okay. Sketch.
This is your sketch. But okay. We are obsessed with food and how to get it in your body fast and how to get feces out of your body in different ways. You know?
Do you know why?
It's just like classic, you know, grossness, obsession with like diarrhea, you know?
It's just like, it's
third graders.
It's
humor,
the same thing.
You know?
Having diarrhea is like an awkward experience, just like, you know, watching this guy on a cable access show is an awkward experience. So we just like that in a way, and that's funny to us.
I think farting's still awkward for most people. Diarrhea is very awkward, especially
it's
when
the greatest word in the English language.
You have
the worst word.
Yeah, we use it twice. We're rehearsing our new live show, and we use it twice in the first 5 minutes.
So there's a whole new live show?
New live show. Yeah, we're doing it. Dr. Steve Brühl co-headlining tour.
So he's going to tour with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, the Brühl thing, that I mean, I can see where that's sort of sourced in, you know, like the guys who painted and like that type of show.
Yeah, like the Bob Ross thing.
Yeah.
Or what's his name with the California show, the guy that just died.
The other painter?
No, the guy who goes around, hey, what's this, man? You got the,
Doesn't matter. But like people like Zach and people like John C. Reilly and Odenkirk. And I think Cross can do it too. There are certain dudes who are obviously incredibly talented, not the guys that are doing exactly the only thing they can do,
right,
which you use. But there's a certain type of performer that can lock in. And they're rare, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. There's only a handful, and especially in our world where you're working with true lunatics.
Yeah.
It, like, it's a challenge to them. Like, John was like, I have to be like these people you use.
So he loved it.
Yeah, he loved it. You know, when we first started working with him, he just loved being in our studio because it was very like, he called it like comedy anarchy.
Uh-huh.
Because he's making a couple big movies. And
right.
There were no adults around.
Yeah.
There was nobody saying,
we can hang out here all day and shoot and shoot and do whatever you want. And finally, I think he's finally accepted this character as one of his greatest comedy characters. And he's like, let's take it to the next level. He's done some live stuff with us before, but this is his first time.
And how's it work? Does it go well?
It's amazing. He can get up there with no ideas and just fully improvise like an hour. He's such a talent. Yeah.
He's amazing.
He's one of the greats.
It's amazing. One of the greats.
So how does it work when you guys tour? I mean, who else goes out with you? It's just you two and
it's
John?
Just
and
us. We went with
Doug Lusenhop, who you should have on the show, DJ Doug Pound.
Yeah.
He's been with us from the beginning as an editor and writer, and you know, he's responsible, not he's you know somewhat responsible for sort of the edit style of the show.
Yeah, right.
And he's a sampler going work. It's a very interactive kind of thing with visuals and sounds and Tim and I fucking around.
Yeah. So you go out and you have sketches.
Yeah, some sketches are characters from our show you might recognize. Others are brand new things.
How much room do you like when you produce a TV show? Obviously, you're shooting now. I know hours of footage.
Yeah.
But how much on the stage show do you leave room for improvising?
It all gets edited at the end of the night. And the audience gets implanted with a different memory of the event.
Do you improvise or you don't?
Yeah, we do. We do. Our shows are like, you know, there's a nice tight outline of what we got to get to. Props and gags,
right,
stuff like that. But we love going off the rails and having fun.
Yeah, the audience must wait for that.
We rewrite the show during the first like week of being, you know, we kind of get inspired by what gets laughs and
what kind of
venue doesn't.
What are you playing?
We're playing like kind of big theaters, like 1,000 seat theaters.
Yeah?
Yeah. Just like a big professional,
right,
annoying, nice, where you might have seen like, you know, the Beach Boys last week.
How would you characterize your fans in general? Because they must be sort of unique in their nerdiness. And I imagine a lot of intelligent ones.
Yeah, super. Yeah, amazing fans. And a lot of it is like the greatest reaction we get is people saying, this is what my friends and I laugh about. Nothing else. It's only what you guys think is funny. Like, we get that. You know,
yeah.
It is a club if you get the Tim and Eric world, I think.
Right. No, I think so, too.
So people, they respond to that, and they're, like, kind of fans for life.
It's a lot like Ween or Zapper or some, like, yeah. or these people that build these worlds. Like, you have a world.
Yeah.
And the people that get it, and the people that don't are like...
They feel alienated by it.
Alienated, it's like, they don't even...
I don't have time for
register.
This. I don't have time for this.
You don't know
what's
happening.
That's exactly true. Yeah. But these kids are like, it's awesome, because we just did a tour. We also have a band called Pusswit Bang Gang.
Yeah.
That was part of the Awesome Show, and we put out a record recently. We toured the South, and these kids still know every lyric of every song we've done.
So what do you play?
Guitar.
And what do you play?
Guitar.
And who's the rest of the band?
The rest of the band, Davin Wood, who's a composer that we've worked with for all of Awesome Show and our movie. And then this bassist, Mark Livingood, who's a real, like, North Hollywood actor kind of guy that we found on Back Pages.
Yeah?
Like,
is he a good bass player?
He's okay.
He's pretty good. He's got bad tone.
Yeah.
You know, like,
he
Yamaha.
Has, like, 7 bass pedals. It's you would not believe
many,
how many,
like,
bass
compression
pedals he brought.
And, you know, EQs and stuff. And
he's
delay
a gear
pedal.
Nerd that doesn't
he's
work.
Yeah.
He's a gear nerd.
The original drummer had
awesome.
To have oxygen, like, while he played, and we wanted to bring him on tour, and he's like, listen, dudes, I have to have this oxygen thing. And we're like, we love that. Like, use as much as you can during the set. That looks so funny.
Was he have emphysema?
Can't remember what we had, but I think for insurance reasons, we're like, we can't bring you, dude. I'm sorry.
Oh, was he an old guy?
He's pretty young. He was the worst drummer we've ever played.
Yeah.
You know, he could not figure out, if you tried to explain the concept of, like, just a four, just give us like a 4/4 rock beat with some fills in it. It was just like, wait, no, just
unbelievable. Talk about bad tone, too.
Yeah.
Bad tone on
drum tone. Oh my God, his drum tone was.
He had like 40 cymbals, and he had an assistant. He had a guy that came with him that helped him set up. But
drum roadie?
Yeah.
He couldn't keep a 4/4 rock beat. It was insane. I would never have been more stressed about it. Have you ever heard, like, you know, Dark Side of the Moon? Like, just that sort of just 4/4 or whatever, you know. No, can't do that.
But this band was...
Can you feel the groove? Can you feel when we change here? Can you feel that sort of to the four?
No.
This band was based off of The Doors after Jim Morrison died.
Okay.
Tim sent me this videotape of this German studio thing. It was The Doors trying to be The Doors without
As
Jim
a trio.
Morrison.
Right.
And it was the most uncharismatic, shitty performance we've ever seen. And we're like, we should make a band that's just like that. You know, it's like just bad blues rock.
Right.
So these guys sort of worked for it in a way. You know,
right.
Just like... Not the greatest.
I just saw that movie, Frank, the John Ronson script about the guy who wears the big...
Yeah, I didn't see it yet.
It's great.
I saw online. You loved it.
It was great because, like, in the same way, like, something happens at the end of that movie. And it's sort of, like, it's based on a true story from John Ronson about... There was a performance art-ish rock band fronted by a guy that wore this paper mache head.
Jack-in-the-box head or something.
Well, it's just like a paper mache head.
Uh-huh.
But that was his thing. But the weird thing, he wouldn't take it off. So he had deeper issues. And, you know, in this film, like, he wears it all the way through, and it's sort of like cryptic. Like, why wouldn't he take it off? And they're like, he just doesn't. He sweeps in it. And it's like, but you buy it, you know, because it feels authentic. And what was interesting, not to give away that movie, too, in relation to the Doors thing, is what so many bands, especially rock bands, are completely carried by the personality and the momentum of the singer.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, like, it's all about that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You don't really think
those
about
other guys
that.
Could have been anybody.
No, of course they could have.
Sorry, John Densmore.
I can't even listen to The Doors.
No.
I'm probably going to get some flack for that. I mean, I can appreciate them, but
it's juvenile music.
Well, it's not even juvenile. I just had a problem with no bass.
Right.
Like, I had a problem with keyboard.
Oh, all that annoying. Bing, that, bing, yeah, bing, that's bing, really...
You know, and I like that guy. Man's Eric. Is he dead too now?
Yeah,
he's gone.
Everyone's gone?
But, you know, that goes back to what we love is, like, there's this desperation. They're trying to get it together.
Right.
And like, trying to figure it out, and it just didn't work, and we thought it was so funny.
I also like that idea of
love that.
Whenever we get into the show business, everybody that gets into show business doesn't have more than a 2-year plan at the most, you know? So
I want to be on TV.
Yeah, so exactly.
Yeah.
So you get to the point where you're in The Doors and you're leads you, the guy that's the driving force here is dead. It's like, now I have to be in a band for the rest of my life. I don't know anything else. So
you're just gonna live off the legacy of that guy.
Yeah, forever.
Forever.
Yeah.
It's fucking mind blowing. Yeah. And then you gotta suck it up and tour with it.
Yeah.
And you know, you get enough people that love the Doors that are sort of like, well, they're our guys. It becomes like a team thing. Like, you know, sort of, yeah. You know, about get the records. Somebody,
Ray Manzarek wrote a book called, oh God, it's something, The Poet in Exile. He wrote a book called The Poet in Exile, which was a novel about a lead singer who had faked his own death and is living on an island, who contacts the main character of the book, whose name is Roy.
Yeah.
And I swear to God.
Yeah.
And it's a whole like fantasy fiction about what Ray Manzarek wished really happened in life. God. It's insane.
What do you guys think about, have you read any, like, imagine a lot of these kids that are your fans, if they're not, you know, like way high. I imagine there have been sort of serious papers written on Tim and Eric.
Yeah, a wonderful girl out of Michigan named Kathy Fisher, I think.
I'll
give her a plug. She wrote a really great piece, like how to explain Tim and Eric to your parents.
Uh-huh.
I think if you can look that up on her, her searching her, but she gets it.
But do you guys get it? Do you ever read things where you're like, I never thought about that, but I guess we are on the pulse of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because we're not very articulate about it. You know what I mean? You don't.
Well, we thank God for those because
it helps us in these kind of interviews.
Yeah. Like, okay, let's read up on this before we.
Because I think that's the thing I always struggle with. And the more I talk to people, the more I learn that it is not intentional. That it's sort of like Kubrick's a good example. It's like, have you seen that documentary about The Shining?
Oh, yeah.
Where it's sort of like, maybe he did think like,
yeah.
But the more important thing was like that he was such a genius that he didn't even know. That he didn't even know what he was loading that thing up with.
Yeah.
To me, that's sort of fascinating.
We don't intellectualize our work.
Right, you can't
beforehand
really.
Or afterhand.
How the fuck could you?
No, we just do what we want to do, and there is a continuity to it. But we're not sitting around. I think we should do this to do that.
Do you guys think in terms of like even when you talk about like even with the food thing, there are certain things that you guys know that you use,
right?
Like repetition.
Yes.
And completely pushing an awkward thing to the point where it cannot even tolerate itself anymore.
Yeah.
You feel that.
You have to feel it. You can't sit. You can't write it. First of all,
right.
You can't write space dot dot dot. You know, timing it out in this on the script page.
Copy. Copy.
Well, let's. Are you guys going to do another movie?
We want to eventually, but this series is a lot of little movies, which is a lot easier.
And it looks really well produced. Well, what do you think happened with the movie? How do you feel about it? I think I talked to you about it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it was for us. I think it was like a lot of eggs in a basket situation.
Well, let me give you my two cents honestly.
Yeah,
because I watched a movie.
Yeah,
and it seemed that the context was too large. Does that make sense? That, you know, shooting a big movie, you know, with that type of even just the equipment and the space that entailed, it seemed like you guys like what you do, you didn't have as much control over it.
Yeah, I mean that's. Definitely true. It was a massive, massive undertaking.
Right.
For no money, you know, very little budget. And just the ambition of the idea was so big.
Right.
But, you know, we're happy with it. And I think a lot of people like it. A lot of people hate it, but not because of it. That has to do with what they think about us in general, not necessarily.
But what about your fans? What I mean, are there two camps in the fans?
I think there are certainly, there's some people that probably expected something that they didn't get.
Right.
And it was, you know, what I think when you make a movie, this movie wasn't in our hearts from the beginning of time necessarily. It was sort of like, hey, do you want to make a movie? There's this opportunity. What do you want the movie about? Okay, well, let's sit down and figure out what that is. So it was like, how can we kind of combine our style and make it into a movie? And I think there is something to be said about 90 minutes maybe is too long to be in that kind of world. Or however long it is. But that's why in this new show, we're able to kind of make, like Eric said, we're able to make movies, but you're not invested in this three-act structure that's going to take you an evening away from your kids to experience.
Well, also the one I saw, The Hole,
mm-hmm.
is that what it's called?
Hole.
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 Is that you were sort of mimicking a style of shooting as well. Mm-hmm. So like, and I think that like so much of the older stuff is about, you know, a different kind of raw kind of fucking chaotic
right.
style.
Right.
That when you guys sort of slow things down and everything's sort of meticulous.
Yeah.
It's all very, you know, structured and yeah. it was not a day
formal.
Of, yeah. yeah, it was not a day of sort of like, no, let's try it again.
Yeah, get that tripod. Guy
out get here. The green screen up. Yeah. yeah.
so that must be completely different way of working.
It is. It is. We made a couple of these before, and so we kind of figured it out
yeah.
and how we wanted to present it. But
right.
I also think the themes are different in the sense that I think we're getting a little older, and some of these, like this, the whole, I feel like, is a nightmare that I really had once about...
Where your life might go?
Yeah. Just like, I literally had a nightmare, the worst nightmare of my life, when everyone turned on me. My girlfriend... was fucked all my friends and was doing heroin. I killed Tim. My sister turned on me and my parents turned on me. It was like the craziest thing.
That's wild, man.
Yeah, and I think as you get older, I just, you know, things get heavier, man. It's like,
well, yeah, so because this show, the real darkness starts coming.
The real darkness creeps in and I feel like there's a little of that in this show. You
what
know?
Have I done with my life?
Yeah. yeah.
But also the suburban element of that, like that guy is such a kind of... There's a naivete to somebody that followed that track, you know, that yeah. sort of like, I've got it all.
Yeah.
What the fuck is it really?
Yeah.
And then he's the other version of I've got it all. And it's a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
There's two conflicting nightmares.
Horrible
there.
People. Yeah.
it's a double nightmare.
Well, we don't want to be slaves to our own. I think with this show, we don't want to be slaves to our own perception, the perception that people have of
the
us.
Old stuff.
But yeah. I mean,
you want to evolve.
Sure. I mean, that seems like a natural thing to want to do. You know.
Well, how are your lives? You all right?
Lives are good.
Great place. Great place.
You still married?
Yeah.
You?
Girlfriend.
Yeah. For a while?
New love.
Yeah.
New love. Yeah.
New love.
New love. I live right down the street from you.
You do? In Highland Park?
Mount Washington.
Oh, you do?
Not
up on the hill?
Exact address, but
I don't need it. I can find it, man. I can find your address, dude. Are you up on the hill?
Yeah.
I looked over there. It scares me that there's only like one road in.
Yeah.
You didn't think about that.
Yeah. is it like there was always this weird sort of like, so the only way to get to this house is there? Well, like there's no...
yeah.
like I just see
you
like...
You need a zip line to get out the
right,
Eagle
you,
Rock.
I'm not going to... So you could probably see my house.
I have some escape routes. Yeah.
Yeah, Eric looks down upon your house every night.
I know. I got a buddy who lives up there. I like it up there. Did you get a... The houses are a little weird up there. What kind of...
It's beautiful, like mid-century A-frame house.
Oh, yeah.
A-frame. Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of cabin-y looking houses up there.
Yeah. I mean,
does it look like a cabin?
It's sort of... I mean, no. It looks... It has a lot of glass walls.
Uh-huh.
So it's not cabin-y.
How many bedrooms?
It's got two bedrooms.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where are you living, Slick?
Glendale.
You living in Glendale?
Yeah, I live at the Americana, the brand, right above the J. Crew.
Oh, you're keeping it real.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're just doing it for research reasons, right?
Yeah. I connect to my Armenian audience.
There's some nice parts of Glendale.
I live up in the hill of Chevy Chase Estates.
Yeah.
Which is not an estate at all. It's just a dumb name. And everyone says, what are you on, Bill Murray Road or something?
Nah.
But come on.
Are you, do you have the kids yet or no?
I got a baby. Yeah,
you do?
Girl.
You have a baby
girl. Yeah, you don't know this?
I don't know. Did you tweet it? Oh, look at her.
I try to keep it private, but it's in the open now.
It is?
Yeah.
She's trying to hide the girl?
Yeah, she's got one year left with us, so that I feel now we can...
before you sell her?
Yeah, before she
moves on.
For adoption? Before she moves on.
So how old is that?
She's going to be a year and a week.
Oh, my God. So you've been sleep deprived?
No, it's been great.
Yeah?
I've such a charmed life. I'm blessed.
Oh,
no, I've boy. No, my wife is wonderful.
It's fucked because...
pretty great.
What?
He has such an insane work ethic, and I'm a little bit lazier.
Are you?
And I have a pretty
solid
work.
When it comes to, there's different facets of that.
Yeah, but. When I wake up a little later.
Right.
Anyways, and I was hoping that Tim would slow down with this kid. He would come back to my level and be drowsy, but no, it's like he's like even
major
more.
Manic.
Well, it's a great motivator, I mean, for to work.
Yeah,
because,
yeah.
you know, you're like, oh my God, I have a responsibility.
Everybody says that.
Beyond dogs.
Everybody says that. That
it's
like
insane.
You can feel it.
Yeah. Because I don't know what this is going to be in 2 years when she's like, well, now I need more clothes, Dad.
Well, what about the acting?
It comes and goes. It's certainly not anything you'd want to, you know,
and you,
rely
do you,
on.
Do you have any interest in that?
In acting?
Yeah.
Yeah, I acted
in a few things. Yeah, so a few things. You had a little bit part in the movie he was in.
Yeah.
You were kind of around. Mm-hmm. And then I saw you in, what else?
I do. Quentin Depew, who's a French director, I was in a movie called Wrong Cops.
Uh-huh. Eric only works with French directors.
Yes. It's the new movie, Realité, which is a
French, these are French movies.
Yeah.
So you probably
Wrong Cops is American. This is Marilyn Manson and Steve Little.
Is that out yet?
That's out. Yeah, you can watch it on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
It's actually really good.
There's so many movies on Netflix where the entire landscape has changed where you're like, was that ever anywhere?
Yeah.
Did that movie?
It had a small, it was like our movie had a small theatrical run.
And you were a lead?
Yeah, I was one of the leads, yeah.
How'd it go?
It was awesome. It was really fun. I like doing it. I like working with directors where you're like, you do your thing.
Yeah, right.
But if I work with directors, like I was on a couple episodes of The Office, and it's fucking hard, man. They know what they want from you. And it's so opposite of the way that Tim and I work, which is like, you just kind of find the character. Like,
no time,
no, here's
buddy.
Your character. Here's your lines. You have to say every word of this. So.
And you're okay with it? You can do it?
Yeah. I don't love it. I don't have aspirations to do a lot of acting, but I do want to work with like cool. I had an audition with Larry David because I wanted to be in his movie. That was like one of the greatest Hollywood experiences I had. Like and that was all improvising. That was really fucking cool.
Which movie?
Clear History.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that was like, you just walk into a room, Larry David sitting there. He asks all the producers, like, who is this guy? Do I know him? And I'm like, oh, fuck. But the director and the producers just kind of explained who I was and how Bob and Kirk kind of brought us in here. Right. And I was like,
you get the whole preamble.
Just fucking sweating my ass off. But I sat down, improvised, made him laugh a couple times, and I'm like, I'm out. That was amazing.
Did you get it?
No.
Oh.
Bill Hader got it.
Oh.
But
that's politics. Yeah. That's politics.
We're a
right
bunch
there.
Of we're two Bill haters.
Yeah.
All right. So you got a lot going on.
A lot of shit.
You got how many episodes of this?
There's 8 in total. 7 new ones. If you want to
include
the pilot from last year.
And how many cities are you doing on the tour?
30 100.
Something.
Really?
Yeah. It's like five
so
weeks
many.
Out. 40 days on the road. Not all of them are shows.
Right.
We're doing
but,
double shows,
you know,
shows,
we're doing that
Mark.
Crisscross from Seattle to New York kind of deal, just across the states.
We do a bit where I literally lift Tim and carry him off the set.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it through the tour. I have to start working out.
Do you guys do colleges as well? I mean, no, it's all
We ever from the beginning said you got to do college. We never figured out that.
I never did it.
I think it's a myth. It doesn't really exist.
Well, if it does, they're usually like student activities money and you got to be clean.
They're
and,
bad. Like, yeah, they're bad experiences. We've done it a couple times. It's like you're in an auditorium. And
Or a lunchroom.
People are getting punched in the back and don't know who you are. No.
And then a lot of the kids that go just because they don't have a car.
Yeah. They're
too young to drink.
They're the freshmen that don't know what to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And they're like, you know, there are going to be girls there.
Yeah.
Our show requires like lots of props and costumes. It's not.
So you got to have a stage manager. Like, you got to have. Yeah. Like, someone's got to set it all out.
It's like a traveling musical show.
So we can only do it in these chunks. You know, we can't. One-offs are hard for us, actually.
So do you travel with a stage manager?
Yeah. We got a whole crew, man.
Oh, really?
Tour bus. The whole thing. It's a rock and roll tour.
When did you evolve out of punk rock straight edge living? When did you
that
decide?
That was college. At college, I started drinking beers, smoking weed.
And
I
that got was into, over.
Yeah, and then I was like, oh, I understand why everyone listened to Pink Floyd in high school. Oh, my God.
Did you have
like
regret?
Miles Davis.
Did you have
No. I am so glad I was nice and clear through my high school, because I think I could have gone down easy.
Right.
Just become a wastoid, for
right.
sure.
Right.
So, yeah, early college, I was, like, motivated. In the punk rock scene, we were doing a lot of shit we're doing now, like making shit ourselves, making fanzines, t-shirts. And
those seem to be coming back. I get them in the mail occasionally.
Fanzines?
Yeah.
Really?
Like the ones that are hand-done.
Yeah.
Right.
Like a guy sends me one every month, and I'm like, really? And I'll look at it.
Yeah.
I'm not
an asshole. Technology now, it would be easier to do it very professionally than the hand.
But then, it ruins the whole. I think I probably have one in that stack of shit
somewhere.
It would
be hard to actually even do that.
Yeah.
Because the Kinko's, you got to get that puncher thing that makes the letters.
So outside of the Larry David audition, what has been your experience in Hollywood over the last decade? What have been the highlights?
Tim and I being on The Simpsons, singing. We had songs that drew us. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say some shit like you were on The Simpsons, right?
No, I wasn't. No.
Oh, okay.
No, I didn't.
That's what I thought.
No, yeah, that's funny. That's good. That's good.
Yeah. Come on, they'll write you in.
What?
They'll write you
I'm
in.
I'm okay.
It's
I'm
easy to write.
No, I'm all right. I, you know, I did.
I'll write it for they. Like Bart becomes a comedy guy, and he's on WTF.
Sure,
it's easy.
Sure, pitch
Let's
it.
Do it,
guys. Come on, they all listen.
Well, let me ask you,
Matt Selman. Matt Selman, get Mark Maron on goddamn Simpsons. Everybody else has done it.
I did a hell of a job as a squirrel on Adventure Time.
There you
Does
go.
That mean anything to anybody?
Send
Adventure
this reel
Time.
Over.
That's right. I play a raccoon, a kind of curmudgeonly raccoon on a new animated thing. That's not out yet.
I bet you. I'm gonna,
what?
We'll see. I wouldn't be surprised if this goes somewhere.
I'm very good at being me. You know, if you're looking for a Mark Maron,
I think it's natural.
I can do
smart.
It.
You're a cultural something. Icon of some kind.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a tastemaker.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, I think we covered a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it was fun.
It's been really good.
And when you guys are, have you ever done this extensive a tour?
Yeah, we did it a few years ago. It kicks your butt a little bit. You know?
I just did three oddball dates and one like flying to the next place that day or the next day.
Yeah.
And that was sort of like, holy fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
This is real shit.
Yeah. It's intense.
You kind of lose sense of where you're at and what you're doing.
Absolutely. The food's great, though. On the road, you're in Cincinnati. Yes. And
oh,
it's like
you get some of that spaghetti with chili on it, Cincinnati.
Cracker Barrel.
And just in, I imagine you guys never stop shoving it into
your
mouth.
That's
Am
what
I
we
right?
do. Yeah, we're always constantly playing with food.
All right. Well, I think we did good. Anything else you guys need to say?
Well, you know, watch the... If you're listening, you're not. I mean, you wouldn't be listening if you're probably not a fan. I don't know, but I think try going into the show with some fresh eyes, some fresh ears, because it's
the live show.
No, the bedtime stories.
I liked it.
I think it's a little. It's a different experience if you're like sort of on the fence about our stuff. Or
yeah, it's definitely a different experience, and definitely like it'll lock into that part of the brain that's been established by other things in a clear way for people that don't know you guys.
That's right.
Yeah. Like if someone's dragging their friend in, sort of like, come on, you'll get this one.
Yeah, yeah. It's not going to be that.
You passed on the first stuff, but come on.
No, give they're different now. They're older. I heard them on Maron's show, and they say they're more mature.
Less
and
puking.
They're thinking about things. There was no puking in the one I saw.
No,
almost none.
I got to watch the one with Zach. Do you guys friends with Zach?
Yeah.
Most of the time?
Love him.
Who are some of the other guys that you like working with? John C. Reilly, you like working with Zach. Odenkirk, has he been in
Forte.
Anything?
Forte. Oh, Odenkirk's, there should be two links there. He's in an episode called Toes.
Okay.
That I think you're going to really enjoy. That's Bob's show. That's his episode. He's the star.
Forte's a sweet guy.
Forte's great. He
can do what
sweet.
You want. He
Almost
can do, but
sweet.
He's one of those guys that gets what
he gets it. He can go.
Cried every. He thanks us. It's like therapy for him because he cries every time he's on set with us.
He
He's
gets
like, this
into
was
a
good.
Dark
this is great,
place.
Guys, man, you really got me through this awesome thing. It's awesome.
He learns things about himself.
Yeah,
I think he did that here.
It's beautiful.
All right, thanks, fellas.
All right, thanks.
Thanks for having us.
See, look at that. They were like people, weren't they? They're good guys. Very, and I have a huge amount of respect for their work. And that's our show. Go to WTF Pod for all your WTF Pod needs. Get some justcoffee.coop. Poke around on the site. You know, you can comment through Facebook. You can do... it's hot, man. It's hot. There's no seasons here. There are no seasons here, and I don't know if I'm aging, except occasionally when I see myself in that just the right light, and I'm like, holy shit, what happened to that guy? Oh, it's me. 51 on Saturday. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'm definitely lukewarm. Boomer lives!
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.